Hey, you guys, it's Matt Walsh. Have you listened to UCB Sports and Leisure yet? What are you waiting for? It's the number one improvised investigative journalism podcast in America. And it's funny, too. We've had amazing guests in the past. John Gabris, Ego Wodum, Lauren Lapkus, Andy Daly, Rob Hubel, Mary Holland, Ron Livingston, just to name a few. What are you waiting for? Go to the UCB Comedy Podcast Network and please check us out. I think you'll like it.
Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My armpit kind of hurts. Is that a rash? And I had Asian food, and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Smell like?
I got a thing on the side of my ear.
I haven't cried in 3 years.
Welcome to the Thanksgiving episode of Definitely Dying, folks. Thank you so much for being with us all year long.
Oh, thank you.
It's been a great year, hasn't it, Madeline?
Yeah, it's been a great year. I've been especially thankful for our call-ins. It's been so fun hearing all of your Definitely Dying stories.
Yeah.
I especially love that story about not giving blood during your heavy period. I think about that often. I also often think about that camp story where a bunch of kids get stung by bees.
Oh, right. Not to mention we did a couple of Definitely Dying live virtual reality episodes where we learned a story about a guy who ran head first into a tree wearing a horse mask and scalped himself.
Ah!
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of good time with Claire from the UK.
Yeah.
Who, I, if I'm not mistaken, peed and pooped and sneezed at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we, I think a child that we met in VR who was both burned and frozen. He both wrote his, I think he both was burned by a grill and fell in to a freezing, an ice fishing hole.
That's right. A young Bam Margera.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. We've encountered quite a few stories from you, our faithful listeners,
and
we really appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate you listening and engaging, and we appreciate you sharing all these stories.
Yeah, and Zig, we appreciate you.
Oh yeah, thanks, Zig.
Doing all the work to just produce our podcast, to get also, like, I don't know, you may not know this, but Zig is the man behind most of our social media. I mean, he's really the Wizard of Oz behind our curtain over here.
That's right.
So Zig, thank you to you.
I'm Dorothy, Madeline's Toto. No, we're both cowardly lions and y'all know it.
Last but not least, thank you to all of our guests.
Yeah.
People come in here and share a lot of personal stuff, and they don't have to.
No.
And usually it's nighttime, and they've worked all day, and they come in and just let us ask them how they feel about dying. And I'm very thankful for that openness and willingness to share.
A lot of good perspective, I feel like, we've gained this year from a variety of different stories. I mean, I think that's one of the beautiful things about this podcast is that it can become pretty easy to become myopic about your own medical experience, like those things that have happened to you. But, you know, to have these intimate conversations with people who have gone through any number of things and not only gone through them, but survived them.
Yeah.
I think they've been pretty inspiring stories a lot of the time. Plus, they're funny as fuck.
So a reminder, if you want to share a story, you can call our hotline at 323-388-3879.
Should we kick it off?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Thanksgiving episode. Thanks, folks.
Guys, we have a very special guest today. I'm so excited he's here. He's a close friend of mine. He also was one of the co-directors of the movie that I shot a couple years ago that is now premiering this weekend. It won't be this weekend as of the release of this podcast, will it?
When's the release?
No, it can't be because it's
Saturday.
Well, this
Saturday. Comes out. Oh, is it this Saturday?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the premiere, everybody mark your calendars. Yeah. The premiere is 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, everybody with a time machine, mark your calendars. I wanted to do a nice intro. I really derailed it.
head on over to the LA Comedy Festival. Nobody will be there, but there might be some posters or other stuff just lying around in the parking lot.
Sterling, what were those adjectives you wanted us to use about you?
I think slovenly.
Slovenly, yeah.
Please welcome the slovenly Sterling McLaughlin.
He's a gross, gross man.
Well, thank you. It's so nice to be here.
The movie's called Cold War.
The movie's called Cold War.
One I think of it was our only former like three... guests, Mookie, was yeah. in it. Yeah.
Mookie
yeah.
Blakelock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mookie Michael Blakelock.
Michael Blakelock.
Casey Trella did the
oh,
score.
Yeah. Yeah, Casey another. Trella, yeah. And he, yeah, another former guest. Mm-hmm.
When you see this movie 3 days ago, it's going to be a real trip down memory lane for you.
Yeah,
you're gonna be like, all my friends are here.
What we like to do is we want to make you guys really excited for when you get to see the movie, and you're gonna go out and you're gonna hit up those social medias. You're gonna say, "Bring us Cold War!"
Yeah,
right. And that, of course, that is the American Cold War, not yeah. the Korean action movie.
No,
that's,
no,
that's completely unrelated.
Did you guys know that existed?
No,
no. Oh.
No. I don't know that it matters, but it confused the hell out of IMDb, and we kept having all these people that worked on that movie credited on our movie. We were constantly just...
Like a lot of, stunt coordinators.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I'm pretty sure we didn't have any of these departments on the film. No.
Also, don't confuse this movie with the U.S.-Russian conflict from the 80s. If that's what you're into, this movie's not necessarily... Well, no, it might be for you. But don't have those expectations.
But you're not. Yeah. It's not. It wasn't. It's not a real historical event.
No,
it's a fictional movie. Yeah.
It just so happens to star Mikhail Gorbachev. But in every other way, it has nothing to do with the Soviet Union.
It's a small indie relationship comedy about Mikhail Gorbachev and his live-in girlfriend.
So Sterling, let's ask you the question that's on everyone's mind. Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
So I'm going to ask a clarifying question that I think everyone who's ever done this podcast has asked, which is it think about or is it fear death?
Well, it's a good question because we used to ask fear and now we ask think about.
Yeah,
think
yeah.
About. Okay.
Because it felt like fear would fall within think about, but think about doesn't necessarily fall within fear.
Yeah.
So,
got it.
I would say, why don't you give us a number for each?
Yeah.
Okay.
How much do you think about it?
Think about death like a one would be like someone who has some kind of like neurological condition.
Probably,
where they
yeah.
like can't sense fear, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then so.
Which is maybe like a quarter of our
guess. So as far as thinking about death, I think I'm probably, I feel I think about death a lot as a practical concern.
Sure.
Like just like a like a. Oh, I need to do this so my kids don't die.
Yeah,
you know,
So
near constant on that, but not necessarily a fear of death. Though I am very afraid of death.
Sure,
but I'm very good at not thinking about things that I'm afraid of.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So I just transfer all that anxiety onto completely unrelated things. I've said I'm a solid like. Let's go for like a hard 8.
Okay.
For thinking about,
fear
is going to be much lower.
Probably. Although when I do think about it, I'm very afraid of the idea of death. I would not like to do it. Thank you very much.
Well, that kills our next segment.
I would not like to do it. Thank you very much. Sterling McLaughlin on death.
If you've brought me here to kill me, I just want to make sure you go to the LA Comedy Festival. Enjoy the film. That's why we have two directors, you know, so we can like...
Oh, that's why.
It's like a president-vice president thing.
Yeah,
like,
I always wonder.
We never fly together, you know?
I thought it was like the way that like Saddam Hussein had like, you know, 50 Saddam Hussein doubles that would go out at all times.
Similar idea. Yeah. You'll be happy to know I am not the brains of the operation. So everything will go on perfectly. I'm like Saddam number 43. In the Wilder context, Sterling McLaughlin directing team, he's Saddam Hussein, and I'm the faker that they found in the hole in the ground.
What a lot of people don't know about making movies is you got to have a brains and you got to have a bronze director. You got to have somebody that's there just to crack skulls.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And yeah, really, I'm the enforcer.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
You can't see Sterling is a solid 6'6", 300 pounds of solid packed on
yes.
muscle.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you, this is a very morbid transition, but.
No, please.
You said that you think a lot about your children's death.
Yes.
Is that... I warned you. I warned you. And I wanted to ask, is that just from general day to day, like parent-child anxiety, or is it in relation to the fact that... I mean, like, you have...
The honest answer to that yes. is I'm not entirely clear if my level of sort of parental anxiety is situational or common.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. How would you know?
Yeah, like I feel like there is a degree to which any parent mm-hmm. thinks about their kids dying constantly.
Yes.
Right.
Because yeah. that's kind of what you're built to
built
do.
To
you're
do,
you're
yeah.
built to think about just, that and prevent it. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like, at least for absolutely, like 18 yeah. years. And then yeah. it's like, you know, that's...
Right.
No, that's off your to-do list.
Yeah.
And that's just like where you want to get brunch. You know? Right. Like you get to transition to your pre-childhood. So the very short answer, yeah. which will probably beg a longer answer, is so I have two children. My daughter, who's the older child, has a genetic condition that... has brought about a lot of serious kind of medical stuff. Mm-hmm. So she currently has a lot of, life support is misleading. Mm-hmm. That's not exactly
right. Accurate. Right. Yeah.
She has a lot of things that she needs in the home. Specifically when she sleeps, she has something called a trach collar. She has a tracheostomy, which is mm-hmm. when you have a breathing apparatus mm-hmm. in your trachea. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be humidified at night. It's mm-hmm. long story short, she has like oxygen and a trach collar, and she's got a pulse oximeter, which is the thing that you connect to your finger that beeps if your yes. blood oxygen gets too low. So there are definitely like moments where I'm like, oh, that's what I was saying. Like, there's like the practical concern sure, thing about sure. death. Like, yeah. oh, I need to remember to turn that machine off.
Yeah.
So that she will survive the night.
Yeah.
Which is possibly a little melodramatic, but
not actually
that melodramatic.
It really is. There is a list of things that you right. have to accomplish yeah. before bed. You know.
Yeah. There is a kind of a crushing laundry list of things you need to do every day just to kind of help. Get her through the day.
Yeah.
That when we first were presented with them, because some of this is very new, and I feel like I need to back up a lot.
Back up.
Can I ask before? How old is she?
She's 11.
Okay.
Just turned 11. That's why I hesitated for a second.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to remember when her birthday was. But yes, she just turned 11. And in the past year. So she has a condition called Proteus syndrome, which is a mosaic genetic condition, which is affects maybe there's I like actually if I thought about it, I could think of the hard number. I think it's 62 people.
Oh wow.
Worldwide.
That's crazy.
It's like a very like when I say a rare genetic condition, I mean like we could probably like start writing names.
Yeah,
like,
you could have a dinner party.
Oh no, that's everybody.
Yeah,
you could have exactly. I could probably physically fit every Proteus patient in the world in my two-bedroom apartment.
Wow. So that's like 1 in 100 million or something like that? Would that be right?
Yeah. Something like that. So it's a very, very rare genetic condition. It took us a long time to get to that diagnosis. So, let's just go back.
Yeah.
Is it cool to go back?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like there's like one person in the world that's got like a kid with Proteus that'll like randomly listen to this podcast and be I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
There's
no more than 61.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's about our listenership.
Wow. What if our listenership was just 61 parents of Proteus?
Just exclusively Proteus patients.
Turns out this podcast wasn't specific enough.
Right.
Sorry, go on.
So, So yeah, so my my daughter, so my wife and I had, I actually had very little to do with the actual birth. My wife and I had a baby. I was mostly, it was like me directing. It was like I was mostly there just as like kind of like to help with wardrobe. You know?
But, in that case, you were the brains of the operation.
Right.
You were not the brawn.
Right. Yeah, so we were living in New York. We had our daughter. She was a little, when I say a little premature, she was like a few weeks, like five weeks or something, like not outside of the ordinary.
Yeah.
Fairly uneventful kind of first couple of years of her life. And then roundabout, I want to say when she was two or three, we started to notice bumps on her head. Like literally like the first time I realized it was like washing her hair in the bath and like there was like a knot, you know, like a lump. And I was like, oh, that's odd. You know, and I immediately go to like, oh, okay, so my kid is being abused by the babysitter. Like,
right,
oh,
right.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. Yeah. And that's just, you know, that's a thing.
Yeah. I feel like it was really on the news at that time too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, a bunch of bad babysitters.
And then we just sort of started to notice some other things, kind of just things that were a little strange. Overgrowths, you know, she had one finger that wouldn't really bend, those types of things. And got to the point where we went and we engaged a geneticist to kind of try and figure out what was happening.
Yeah, because you went to regular doctors and they were like, we don't.
Yeah, they were like, I'm trying to remember, this was several years ago. I'm trying to remember the exact like moment where a doctor said to us like, you know, maybe look at this.
Yeah, yeah.
If I were to guess, it was probably something around like we noticed the bumps on her head. We talked to the pediatrician. The pediatrician said, oh, well, you should talk to someone about this. Mm-hmm. We ended up talking to a geneticist who's one of the top geneticists in the world.
Wow.
And started just kind of describing symptoms and was like, you know, don't Google any of this. So, of course, I Googled it instantly.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
In the room. I'm like, have my phone out. And I actually clearly remember saying to this doctor, I said, you know, looking at her symptoms, looking at what we're seeing, I think this might be Proteus. And his response was, no, that would be too weird.
Right, right.
Because it's so rare. It was
that's crazy.
He's like one of the top geneticists in the world. And he was like, all right, like, put Wikipedia away.
That's not
a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, statistically, that's not an actual thing.
Yeah.
And then he actually monitored her for a while and then recommended we talk to people at the NIH, because the NIH, the National Institute of Health for, you know, the uninitiated.
Yeah.
The NIH has a Proteus research group.
So like when he found out it was Proteus, was he like, were you like, told you, I'm a geneticist here, you jerk.
I don't recall that exchange.
You were more like a real thing's happening in our life.
Did he spike a football in your face?
Right. I think it was more along the lines of like, so as I expected, this is Proteus.
Oh,
You know,
how do you spell Proteus? P-R-O-T or D? Is it Proteus or Proteus?
It's P-R-O-T-O-D? I believe, O-T.
Okay.
It's named after, I believe, a Greek god as a shapeshifter.
Oh.
So that's where the name comes from.
Oh.
So, yeah. So everyone just picked up their phones to start Googling.
Yeah, I know.
But
just like you did when you...
Right, exactly. I was like, all right. So, guys, it's called Proteus Syndrome. Don't Google this.
I got it. Thanks.
So, And I hesitated not knowing how to spell it because I don't know how to spell anything.
Right, right.
You're dyslexic, right?
Yeah.
Is that
severely
dyslexic?
Did I just
out you?
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm going to lose my job now. Wait, he's dyslexic?
Wait, he has a kid?
Right. All kinds of things are coming out in this interview.
Yeah.
I've never told anyone any of this stuff.
Don's going to divorce.
Right. Yeah. My wife doesn't know I'm dyslexic, Madeline. So we went to this Proteus research group at the National Institute of Health. And we've actually visited the NIH multiple times. And, you know, they've taken samples and Nika is actually part of the Human Genome Project now as part of that. And they were the people that were able to finally do the actual diagnosis to confirm, yes, this is Proteus.
Yes.
Because one of the things that's happened in the last few years, and I don't know the name of the other syndrome, but there are a lot of other things that have been called Proteus, but now that they're doing like gene testing, they're actually able to isolate like, oh no, this is Proteus. Mm. This is a related genetic mosaic condition.
Yes.
But that's not Proteus, you know? Mm-hmm. So Nika is confirmed as a Proteus case, but yeah. So the NIH was able to give us that information, and they've kind of been very helpful throughout her life and kind of like helping steering. Mm. It's kind of a crazy thing, as you can imagine, for anything like scientific to have such a small sample size.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, you know, we'll ask questions like, so do kids like Proteus have this or this? And they're like, oh, I mean.
Yeah, we don't know.
Like one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
which is a statistically large sample.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like,
well, of Proteus patients,
more than 1%. Yeah.
Your kid has this. So we can say a large percentage of Proteus patients. a not insignificant plurality of Proteus patients has that condition. And then we have at the Lurie's Children's Hospital in Chicago, which is her like home hospital.
Is now
we figured out she's had a few spine surgeries to correct like a scoliosis.
Yeah.
And we've figured out that her doctor is now like the one person who's performed the most procedures on Proteus patients.
Oh,
that's crazy.
Because of his work with our daughter.
Right.
That's insane.
So wait, does that mean that your daughter has had the most What was the word?
Oh, most surgeries?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Obviously, the
that is a good question. I don't know. That's a good question. She's actually, I think, compared to some other kids, and I don't know. I'm kind of talking about my ass. Can I swear?
Yeah.
Who I just did.
Yeah.
For sure. I think, especially a few years ago, like people that are slightly older than she is, I think there was a lot more interventions done, which were found out to be not so great.
Oh.
Because they were trying to control something you kind of can't control, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there's probably kids that have had far more surgeries than she has, though she's had several. But,
What is it? So can you kind of describe the results of Proteus syndrome?
It's kind of... I'm going to do a great job of butchering this description.
Well, there are hardly anybody in the world right, to correct you. So
I fear, I feel I can say without fear of contradiction that there will be some jerk on Twitter that will be like, well, actually, that's not Proteus at all. What your daughter has is just a bad case of the mumps. it's like, thanks, Ragnar 57. Yeah. So it's in her particular case and different kids, it's a mosaic condition, which means it affects different parts of the body in different ways. Mm. But basically it's an overgrowth condition. So certain parts of her body grow at a greater rate than other parts of her body.
Mm.
So for instance, that finger that wasn't bending, that's now kind of become a little bit more pronounced.
Yeah.
Because basically the joints in her finger were growing.
Oh.
Like the bone in her finger is growing at a greater rate than the rest of her hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not necessarily in the most like linear, controlled fashion. And a lot of her more recent medical issues have to do with her spine and her, is this thoracic? I'm looking at you guys like you.
You're pointing to your neck.
Yeah, the inner neck. I could have said neck.
Her spine, her neck.
Neck. Let's just agree to use
layman's terms.
As somebody with a BA in video art, I am confident that this is a thoracic spine that I'm pointing to. Actually, just her neck, the bones in her neck, she has a very long neck, and the bones in her neck are growing in such a way that they're actually kind of have been pressing into her throat and windpipe and kind of collapsing. Collapsing is the wrong word, because that actually means something very specific.
Like compressing?
Compressing. Yeah. Thank you. Compressing her her throat and windpipe and making it kind of difficult for her to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's having kind of like apnea-like symptoms. Mm. So what they did when she went into the hospital for her... So she went in for a spine surgery recently and they put rods in her spine to kind of straighten out her back. And that sort of led to a lot of unforeseen/unforeseeable complications.
Oh.
Including that she wasn't properly expelling oxygen.
Oh.
And it's hard for even the doctors that were on the case to fully describe what happened. But basically when her body went from like being hunched over, I'm doing visual things that nobody on this,
they can see.
Okay. went from being hunched over to being like fully upright.
Yeah.
It kind of wreaked havoc on her like lungs and which already had some sort of issues anyway, and made it so that she wasn't properly expelling CO2.
Mm.
So she was seemingly breathing pretty fine, but then she wasn't able to expel out the carbon dioxide.
How did you figure that out?
There's a machine
that
she was hooked up to.
Yeah.
So she was in the ICU we were in the hospital for like 5 weeks, and ooh, about 3.5 or 4 of those we were in the ICU.
Wow.
So she was hooked up to all kinds of different machines, and the machines are what caught that particular particular thing happening. And then she was So we had a specialist that had been working with her who kind of, you know, is like a ENT, ear, nose and throat specialist, who had sort of put the bug in our ear a year prior, like, hey, the way her condition is progressing, she might end up needing a tracheostomy, which is different from a tracheotomy.
Oh, what's the difference?
So a tracheotomy is
the letter S.
So the difference is...
I'll leave. I'm going to go now. I'm going to go look up the thoracic. sorry. I apologize. That was bad timing.
It was actually impeccable timing.
The timing was fantastic.
For one part.
I just want to call out here that I voluntarily came onto a comedy podcast to talk about my daughter's genetic condition. So anything is fair game here. She might be very pissed if she hears this, but
wait a minute, you consider this a comedy podcast?
How dare you? Yeah. We consider it a strict medical podcast.
Yeah. Those words exactly, strict medical.
Strict medical.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah, so a tracheostomy
versus tracheotomy.
Tracheotomy is removing the trachea. So if you have a cancer or you have something else, and they actually like take out the voice box, the trachea.
Is that when you get that voice?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
the kind of the robot
voice. Like the trachea voice. Yeah.
All the cigarette commercial
Commercial voice, yeah.
Right, and to be clear, I had no idea there was a difference going into this. So I literally thought that they were suggesting giving my daughter like a robotic voice box.
Which
is not the case.
Yeah.
No, thank God.
Yeah.
So what it actually is she has just kind of made a little incision
here. Yeah.
And then she has it's kind of like a bit of silicone held on with a band that goes into her throat and kind of bypasses the sort of the mouth and upper airway area that was sort of the issue.
Yes.
And allows her to breathe through this hole in her neck.
Yes.
There's no other real way to say it. She breathes through a hole in her neck.
Yeah.
As do we all.
Sure, that's true. That's true.
It's the difference of where it is.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Hers is just, she's got two of them.
Yeah.
And then she has different attachments, which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
I hate to say this. But she has something called an HME, which is, it's like a sponge kind of thing that they call it like a nose, because it basically does the same thing as a nose, where it keeps moisture in the system. So it kind of captures and keeps the moisture in. And then she has something called a passiomir valve, which is a speaking valve.
Oh.
Okay.
And that, it doesn't have the same kind of humidifying qualities, but she puts it on and her voice is just like fully there.
Oh, cool.
And she talks over, I don't know how to describe this. She's kind of, for people who have a tracheostomy, she's kind of on the high end of, like, function.
Yeah.
So even with you're not supposed to be able to speak with the HME on, but she totally does.
Oh,
her voice
with the nose on? Yeah.
Is that a function of the fact that she had this procedure when she was young? Like, is it something, if you had it as an adult?
I think it's kind of that... Yeah, I don't actually know the question of that. I don't know if the question is that. I don't know the question you just asked me. Could you repeat it? No, I don't know the answer to that. I think it's just a matter of like she. I don't know. Mm-hmm. She yeah. like she's just on the line of needing it.
Mm.
If that yeah. makes sense. Like she yeah. needs it. She for real needs it. But yeah. like she's kind of she's on that line.
Yeah.
yeah.
Whereas there's other. I mean, it's a lot of kids get them. And a lot of people who have like emergent situations, like car crashes,
yes.
that kind of thing.
Right, right.
Like, I've actually, thinking back, I've known a lot of people that have this kind of like telltale scar right here.
Oh, yeah.
And that's usually because they had like a emergency.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Tracheostomy. That they then kind of grew out, or then like whatever the underlying problem was,
yes,
was able to.
Yes.
You know,
oh, gotcha.
They got it out. So it's called decannulating.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Google that. I don't know yeah, what it means yeah. either. Yeah.
You're listing term after term that we cannot spell.
Right. Nor can I, so it's perfect.
Decantaloping. Anyway. Look it up,
yeah,
folks.
Okay.
No, but continue. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, no. And I mean, so there's that. And then also kind of related because of just it's all the throat and everything.
Yeah,
she also
yeah.
has something called a G-tube, which is a feeding tube, which is kind of how all people should eat. I'm
really?
I'm a huge fan.
Is it the future? Maybe it's the future.
Yeah. I think it's the future. So the G-tube, for the same reason, G-tube is like, it looks, and this is going to sound crass, but it's true, it looks almost identical to a beach ball valve.
Oh,
okay. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And
like
it's in the wall of her stomach. They basically uh-huh. like go in, I think laparoscopically. I don't know. It was a very, very small incision.
Yeah.
And they bring the stomach up and kind of stitch it in such a way that you can access the stomach from the outer. I'm again pointing like people
yeah.
can see this.
They can see.
can access the stomach through the outer wall of the abdomen.
Yeah.
And then she gets hooked up to a pump and there's a bag with food in it that just gets delivered, you know, over like half an hour. She gets like 400 calories. She does that a couple
yeah.
of times a day.
Do you guys do that?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So I feel like I need to say, like, she's at home. She goes to school.
Yeah, yeah.
She's, like, super,
she
like,
does all this, goes to school.
Yeah. She yeah. goes to school. She goes to, like, the principal's office once a day to get one of her feedings. And that's,
yeah.
like,
right.
basically. And then she has a nurse that has to go to school with her. It's a whole other story. But, which I can also get into. That's
yeah.
a whole other story that I will talk about in 35 seconds.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of great because she gets all of her nutrition, including all of her, like, vegetables and stuff.
Oh.
So she still can eat by mouth. She just can't tolerate a lot of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But all the stuff she eats is like pumpkin pie, cheesecake. You know,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Like all the things that you want to eat.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
feel like weird, you know.
And then she gets all the obligatory eating.
Yeah. Like she
junk.
Literally gets
yeah.
like chickpeas and like kale pumped into her
yeah.
stomach from a bag. And like, I want this deal.
Yeah.
It really is the future. I mean,
yeah.
As we become a fast food society, this
yeah.
will be how we keep humans alive
yeah.
and not
yeah.
floating in space as like these balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. And it's in, yeah, I feel like I also have to say like all of these things probably sound terrifying, but as her parent, they've made such a huge difference in her quality of life. And
yeah.
like, that's it's like you need them.
Mm-hmm.
If you need them, it's not upsetting.
Yeah. yeah.
It's like, oh, thank God. She doesn't,
yeah.
you know.
It really is remarkable also how much you're able to provide for your child yourself, you know, that like this isn't just that your child doesn't have to live in a hospital, that all
right.
those things that you described are things that you can do. Like, you know, maybe
yeah.
you have a different set of things that you have to do as a parent, but you just have a set of things that you have to do as a parent that you're capable of doing, you know, that like, yeah, it's going to be harder. Is your is she a happy child? I mean, is she a
oh,
fun
yeah.
loving kid?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, she's a little like, as my wife says, dark and stormy. But, I mean, she's sort of always been that way.
Right, right, right.
She has kind of a really high threshold for just a lot of horror.
Yeah.
yeah.
She's a big Stranger Things fan. I'm trying to say she's a big Stranger Things fan.
She's
seen every episode of both seasons multiple times.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah. She's completely...
Well, she is 11. You said
yeah,
she's 11.
She's 11. Yeah, for like right around Halloween when the second season came out, we actually had like a bunch of neighborhood kids over to the house and like put a projection screen in our bedroom and like
oh, wow.
all the kids like piled on the bed and watched like most of the second season.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's great.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, she's like, again, she's at school. She has tons of friends,
yeah.
which is, you know, yeah, she's like, as normal as somebody who's like one of 62.
Sure,
right,
sure.
Right.
Sure. But she probably doesn't know that, right? She doesn't know those numbers. She's
fully aware of everything.
Oh, she's fully aware of 60, that there's 62.
You should really be talking to her. She's got these facts down much better than I do. She knows which spine is the thoracic spine. Yeah.
Does she think it's cool? I mean, being like not. That
yeah, no,
crap.
No,
like,
no, it's not.
Is there
all.
Any
she
part
does.
Of her that thinks some of it's like?
I think there's
such a
there's
part of,
part
such
of
a small,
her identity.
Unique group of people.
Yeah, no, I think there's part of her identity that's very into it. Like even the trake is like there's sort of a subculture.
Mm-hmm.
If you look up like trake fashion on Etsy,
really,
there's a ton of it.
Cool.
There's a ton of people that have made because it's. It looks like a necklace, have to have this thing secured to your throat or it falls out, and so a lot of people have made necklaces and have made kind of like a lot of, and G-tubes too. There's a lot of like, custom pads and a lot of stuff. So I think it's in a way I think she views it almost like kind of punk rock. She's like part of this subculture and she's like into it. And just like disability rights in general, like she's very like. She's a very woke 11-year-old.
She sure is.
So she's very like. It's funny. Like I've actually resisted talking about it a lot publicly, in part because I've like don't want to like burn her bits. I want her to be able to like come out and like, write her own memoir book about her experience from her perspective and about her, her fucked up dad who went on like comedy podcasts to talk about her medical condition.
Again, we are really offended by that term. This is
a strict
medical podcast.
Sterling.
Yeah. And one day we will learn what the thoracic spine is.
One day.
I won't. I refuse.
The sheer number of things I try to teach Madeline that she just won't take. It's zero. It's literally zero. Zero things. No, it sounds great. I mean, as you were telling the story, my fear for your child was that she was isolated because of this condition. But the fact that like she's rich with, I mean, I didn't have friends when I was a kid. So that sounds like, it's not a trade kind of thing, but that like, I love hearing that she's, rich with friends and that she has like an active life despite any of these sorts of things. And that seems like, that seems like a real victory. That it sounds like you have a kid who's pretty tough also. And I'm going to say this, and this is, I don't know why I'm ending on this because it's the worst point of all. G-tube is a fucking cool term.
Yeah.
That is a cool term.
It's a G-tube.
G-tube.
It just feels like Warren G.
Yeah.
It should be.
It's cool.
It's like Warren G's new app.
Yeah. G-tube.
Yeah.
G-tube. It's like, you've got Beats by Dre and then you've got G-tube.
G-tube,
yeah.
Just like a Bluetooth speaker.
And that's Dre's brother, isn't it? I believe Warren G is Dre's brother. Yeah, something like that.
I also have always admired, I've known like you for a while. Mm-hmm. You and Dawn are some of the chillest parents I've ever encountered.
Dawn is my wife.
Too. Oh, yeah. Dawn is Sterling's wife. I've honestly.
She's also a much better guest than I am. She's a much,
honestly, I
much
just
more
have
informed
to say,
person.
Dawn is cool as hell. I am such a Dawn fan. She's so cool.
She's very cool. One of the reasons that I think my daughter has had such a successful go of it in life is because of Dawn. Not only just as a person, so I would like to spend the rest of this podcast talking about my wife.
Honestly, we should.
How I like her.
She's the fucking best.
But she's like a, like a.
What'd you guys call her in college? Didn't she have some vagina name in college?
Because
she was like always like, because she was like.
No, I mean, her nickname was Dawn Salon because she caught everybody's hair. But that's like a. That's now her Instagram handle. But no, she's.
I almost made a terrible joke. I just have to step back from the mic.
Step back from the mic.
No, Dawn is we both went to Hampshire College, which is where I met Wilder, my co-director, and Allie, our producer on the film, which Cold War, the movie, premiering 4 days ago at the LA Comedy Festival.
We're going to get some cool there's going to be one man in a metal suit.
Right, yeah.
That's how I imagine a time traveler dresses.
He's going to be like, I made it. I heard you on the podcast. Dawn's she's a like an Ivy League educated sex ed teacher. So she's actually one of the first people to graduate from Columbia University with a degree in what was it called exactly? Like public health and human sexuality, I want to say.
Okay.
Something like that.
Super cool.
So she's an expert in a great number of things, as she would tell you. And and just kind of a very active involved and very like conscientious about like, again, that kind of disability rights sort of stuff and like and really helping Nika navigate that stuff and figure out that stuff. And
Yeah.
So I think we're doing a good job. I mean, I think it's within her right as a preteen to feel differently.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't think we're doing a terrible job.
Yeah.
It would be, I think that would be, it would be weird if she thought we were doing a good job.
Yeah.
As an 11-year-old.
Exactly. But if she's free to have the thoughts that every 11-year-old is having, then you're doing a real good job,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
We try.
As a parent of zero, that's what I
But you speak about it with really convincing authority.
Oh, yeah, I have a lot of conviction for a guy who has no basis in experience whatsoever.
For a guy who
no.
stirred a pot of chili for 12 hours straight last week.
Everyone who eats my chili is my child.
I hope you don't mind me saying this. I feel like you could book dad.
Definitely. I'm 40. I mean, if dad's the only role for me, the fact that I haven't booked it in my actual life is maybe more problematic, but,
got a lot more auditions, my friend.
I know. My dates don't tend to like being treated as auditions, but you know, I give them their sides. I say, read along.
it's like, I'm not saying any of these things.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Do you think on this take I could just improv a little bit?
It's weird, Ben, that your role is referred to as sexy dad. You have a name. You know it. You wrote this.
Yeah. I have a question about your general chillness as parents.
Okay.
Is it an act? And by that, I mean, how often do you feel preoccupied and how effectively have you been able to integrate this into your normal life, kind of the way Ben was talking about it, like just the same as like some kids, you know, bedtime is like take a bath, brush your teeth, read a book. Like how much have you been able to make this feel normal? And how much do you feel overwhelmed all the time, which is how I imagined I would feel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, well, I mean, just I frequently have people tell me like, oh, you're so brave or you're so.
Yeah.
You're nuts. What are you talking about? Like, That makes me feel like I'm not properly emoting, like, I'm not conveying what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I think that we're very fortunate. We could be in a lot worse situation. With everything that I've just mentioned, we've also got a lot of amazing sort of privileges and ability to do things. But yeah, it's very overwhelming.
Yeah.
I think the most overwhelming thing about anybody with a tracheostomy is that you can't be alone. You need to, I mean, there's not actually a lot that my daughter needs.
Literally,
if I were to write down a list of all the things we have to do, it would be very overwhelming.
Yes.
But practically, it's kind of muscle memory already.
Right.
She's only been home for the hospital since, when did we get home? Like August?
End of
August
wow.
or something. So it's not that. And again, this is happening 4 years in the past. Be sure to check out Cold War the movie at the LA Comedy Festival. It is currently November something. So she's been home for a few months. But you put her to bed, you put this thing on her, you hit one button, you hit another button. If nothing beeps, you go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, that's
yeah.
That's
and,
it.
Yeah.
But
and that's the carbon dioxide test?
Is no, that the, so oh, she has okay. a pulse oxometer,
okay.
which is just the oxygen level.
Yeah.
The carbon dioxide, since she's had the tracheostomy, is not an issue. And then she has a compressor, which just pulls oxygen out of the air and feeds it into her trach collar, which is a humidifier.
Gotcha.
So it's like a little bubbler thing that connects to a tube that she wears like on her throat, almost like a oxygen mask.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha, yeah.
And it just provides extra oxygen and vapor while she sleeps.
Yeah.
But that stuff is just like, bop, bop, yeah. that takes that long. Like as long as it takes me to like say bop, bop, bop.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
There's hand gestures that make this make more sense.
You just bop a couple buttons.
Bop, 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 bop,
yeah,
bop.
Then. Yeah, yeah.
So that's all pretty easy. But the thing that's difficult is, well, first off, we still do not have any type of home nursing, which is a logistical concern, purely logistical. Like insurance and nursing companies and staffing agencies and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
She does have a nurse at school. My wife actually went to school with her for like a considerable amount of time, like I think a few months.
After the
Like my wife like just took off work and just went with my daughter to school and just sat in the back of the room. But when you have a trach, there's like a lot of things that like could but don't go wrong.
Yeah.
Like ever in our experience.
Yeah.
We're like, why do we need to be here? But you need somebody who's like tracheostomy trained.
Oh, okay.
Which my wife and I are. It's like CPR plus some other stuff.
Yeah.
That we need to know how to like in an emergency change a tracheostomy.
Okay.
Right.
You know, which means just literally take the one plastic thing out, put the other thing in.
Okay.
Which is also very overwhelming until you've done it like 10 times. And then you're like, okay, that was easy.
Yeah. Do you do it for her?
Yeah. Every 2 weeks. It's just like, you know, take a shower, brush your teeth, change the tracheostomy, you know, go to bed.
Just hearing that makes my heart race. But also, in all fairness, I get overwhelmed trying to put someone to bed.
Right, yeah.
Why are you putting people to bed?
I babysat.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
But yeah, no.
I wasn't trying to accuse you of never having babies.
I babysat. And anybody who says I've never babysat is lying.
Let's bring out our next guest.
But to answer your question, there's parts of that are super overwhelming. Yeah. And there definitely have been times where I have not felt at all brave.
Yeah.
The opposite of brave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Excruciatingly cowardly.
Yeah.
There was points in the hospital before, like literally before all these interventions I'm talking about happened.
Yeah.
Where it was like, are we all going home?
Right.
You know, like the conversation was beyond my wife and I having that conversation. Like there were doctors and specialists like, you know, so there's, you know, different people that we could have you talk to about, you know, do you want any clergy type people? No, you're good. Okay. That's fine. No, you don't need them. There was like times where I like went back to work. It was I was like sleeping in the hospital and going to work after like 2 weeks because I like was worried about my vacation days or something. I don't know. You do weird things when you're like underslept and whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, and it feels like it's this funny mix of like the goal is to make life feel normal or the necessity is to just like live your life at like it needs to become your normal life. So I feel like when you're in like a period of like, I wouldn't call it crisis, but like, well, you know, when you're in that kind of situation that really changes the rhythm of your life, I feel like the wires in your brain function funny.
Right.
Like this is like this is not a comparable example, even a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But my husband Ben got a tonsillectomy a couple months ago. And
it's very similar. There's ectomy in it and everything.
There's ectomy, you know, very dangerous. No, he got a tonsillectomy. It was totally routine, like fine. But like, even like in his weird hospital haze, he was like, I had like a commercial audition that had like come up and I was like, oh, I obviously can't go to that because you're like under anesthesia and you're at the hospital and I'm not going to leave you at the hospital to go like audition for like a gum commercial or something. And he kept being like, no, you should go. You should go to that. Like, it's that your brain sort of wanting things to be normal and then they're
not. I'm picturing Ben with like gauze in his mouth for some reason and like being completely like out of it. Just like,
yeah, he was like,
he's legally unconscious.
I was like, no.
You should go. And he's just like his eyes rolling into the back of his head.
Anyway, you went to work.
Yeah, you know, but like, and then I would like get a call from Dawn and she'd be like, oh, so they want to do this. And I'd be like, oh, okay. And then I would just walk like probably like 15 minutes from my office to where the hospital is and just like have the darkest thoughts you could think of.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Well, you know, I mean, you know, like, I don't know if, I don't know if I will emotionally survive this so that I can continue like living.
Yeah.
But, you know, my wife can be with our son.
Yeah,
like that kind of like those kinds of thoughts, like the sort of like, oh well, you know, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, this might just be that might be it for me. But, but then, you know, thankfully we all survived.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten any texts while we've been talking, so I think we're all still alive.
Nice.
Good. Does it make you chiller about other parenting stuff?
Like
sort of. Yeah.
I mean, but so here's the thing. So I. for years and probably somewhat related. All of my stress manifests as anxiety about seemingly completely unrelated things. So I will have, like, if I think there might be like a password I need to change on a website, it will be an all-consuming, like, day-long, like, freak out. You know?
Yes.
Does this make you feel better? It seems like this is, like, a big relief for Madeline.
Yes.
Like,
she's
she's found my thing.
Yes.
Yeah, so, or, like, you know, let's say, and it, like, manifests in, like, the dumbest things. Like, literally, like, internet security has, like, stolen years from my life.
Right.
Financial stuff, I do fine. We're very comfortable. But, like, that doesn't mean I don't have weird random freakouts about it.
Sure.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to put my daughter's trait collar on. You know, like, nothing. Like, does not register as stressful.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it just comes out sideways. I think that's the best way I can describe it. Like,
anybody makes total sense.
Like, any kind of, like, panic or anxiety disorder, I think that's what it is. It's like you're never freaking out about the thing that you can't. I can't freak out about this stuff.
No.
Yes.
Like, there's no space emotionally to do it.
Yeah. And you chose some things that, like, while you maybe will, you know, slightly blow them out of proportion, are all sort of controllable things. That, like, if you change your password on a frequent basis, you are more likely to avoid, you know.
Sure.
I think it makes sense.
I think control being the key operative word though. I have tried to control the entire internet before. Took a hammer to a Mac tower once to try and, you know, just make sure that all the data in there wasn't going to get leaked to the Russians. You know, it's gotten pretty crazy. Like, I don't want to underplay how, like, far out it gets sometimes.
You have your moments.
But thankfully, I've been able to sort of, keep that, keep the true crazy away, because now I at least I've been able to have it diagnosed and go, oh, okay, that's what this is.
So, to bridge into another topic that you brought up when you came in,
Cold War, the movie, time travel already happened.
Yeah. Controlling the internet,
coming sooner to VOD than when this conversation's started.
Infinitely sooner. you have a weird a knee phenomenon.
Yes, sort of. So the full story is, now that we've exhausted all of the interesting things about my daughter, stop talking about that kid. It's funny because I was thinking about coming on this, and you guys are both self-described hypochondriacs. And is there a word for the opposite?
Oh.
Like, where you never think you're sick?
Hypochondri don't.
I'm a hypochondri don't.
I believe it's a hupochondriuk.
Yeah.
I believe that's the term. Let's look it up and see.
I was going to try to say hypochondriac backwards. It's too hard.
So this has been a long, lifelong thing for me. And I think it might actually be somewhat related to just the way I grew up and the family that I have, who are lovely. Don't get it twisted. But just sort of needing to be kind of okay. So I have a parent with a mental illness who probably doesn't want me talking about it. Mm-hmm. But, but, you know, I don't need to say anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think when you are in that sort of situation, you tend to sort of, like, default to, like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. You know, it's very, like, you get very Presbyterian about the world. Presbyterian?
Yeah.
Sure.
Or Catholic in some parts of the country.
Catholic. Yeah. You know, most Christian sects.
Most,
just, like, everything's fine. Yeah. We're all very polite here.
Yeah, or you get, like, that gritted teeth, like,
we're good. It's, like, the entire Midwest is like that.
Yeah.
I'm right at home.
Oh, yeah.
But, I've kind of never, like, allowed myself to sort of acknowledge problems.
Yeah.
So in sixth grade, a girl ran into me on the playground by accident, and my knee popped. And I couldn't really stand on it, and I went to the hospital, and I think they might have done an X-ray. They might not have. Anyway, I ended up with, like, gauze on it. Or not gauze, ace bandage on it. Like, crutches for a few days.
Yeah.
Again, that's, so it's sixth grade, so yeah, that's however many years ago.
Yeah.
I'm now in like 30th grade or something.
you should have graduated.
Still in
yeah,
school. This is,
yeah. Yeah, you are very bad at school. Undiagnosed dyslexia.
it was long enough ago that there it was like multiple cycles of like tapered denim.
Yeah.
You know, like,
right.
Oh, yeah. You were on one of the upticks of tapered denim. Yeah.
So that's how long ago. It was like 3 or 4 tapered denims ago. But I never really like, you know, I kind of like, you know, just sort of put an ace bandage on it and like got crutches out of the closet that my brother had had from when he like broke his leg and like just, and I just walked it off.
Yeah.
And then through the next 20 some odd years, my knee would just pop out of joint randomly.
Ooh.
And I would just kind of, you know, like literally my knee is out of joint and I would just kind of go like,
oh yeah,
just kind of straighten my leg out.
Oh jeez.
And it would pop back in and then I'd be like, okay, so that's fine now. And then it got to a point where it was like, wait, actually maybe not fine. Like what is going on here?
Yeah.
And it started to get to the point where it was happening multiple times a week.
Oh no, no, no.
Like I would, and like when I sit, I just naturally sit kind of like this where I like have my feet tucked under. Just full of visuals.
Yeah, I know you're really. You've really. I take back what I said when I said it seemed like you've been on many podcasts before.
I was born for this media.
Directors
always saying, "Look at me."
So I had my feet like just I frequently roll my feet under myself when I'm sitting in a chair, and my knee would just like pop out during meetings and stuff.
Oh no.
And then it just.
So you're a grown up at this point.
Yeah, I'm like
you're
in
like
my
in your ad
late
career.
30s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like in like board meetings and like, oh, what was that? It's like, oh, hold on one second. You know, oh, now it's back. And they're like, what is wrong with you? Yeah. What the hell is going on? And so I went to a sports medicine doctor and they were like, so what did they say? It's something like a chronic tear. Basically, okay. Meaning like your ACL is just.
It's been torn forever.
Yeah, like it's just like. It's not like an acute thing. Like you just your ACL ruptured many, many years ago.
Yeah.
That's kind of
ruptured.
When.
Wow.
From a girl crashing into you on the playground?
Well, yeah. Like if you imagine, like her knee hit the side of my knee, and just sort of, I think, either tore it then or. Partly tore it, and then like I re-injured it multiple times throughout my life, and like didn't notice.
Yeah, yeah.
Is when I kind of found out that I have like a kind of crazy high pain threshold, which I think is hereditary. I think my mom has a similar kind of thing. We're both like hyper flexible and like or we're just like super, super like you know like. Midwestern-y.
Yeah. Right, yeah, yeah.
Just, neither of us will acknowledge if anything is wrong.
Well, luckily we have a test for this very condition. It's a game we like to call Take a Beating. Zig, bring out the bats.
I mean, the funny thing is they're hitting me right now with like full-on Louisville sluggers, and I literally can't feel it. It's like I'm completely numb.
Crack, crack, crack.
So I got it fixed and I have, you know, they took a hamstring, I guess is a fairly new thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a pig part that they use or they use a cadaver ACL.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I've heard this too. Yeah.
Or the most recent version or one of the more recent versions is they actually, take part of your hamstring and they remove that and they kind of coil it and use it as a replacement ACL.
Oh, cool.
Which is apparently like. My recuperation was super, super fast. I guess it's like your body's less likely to reject it because it's your own tissue.
It's like, this lives here. Yeah.
That answers my next question was, why aren't they taking this from the cadaver as well? So I guess it's because, that does make sense that your body would.
Right.
Yeah.
And also just the idea of a cadaver. Anything cadaver in me.
You're probably dead.
I'm a vegetarian. But I think most people would prefer not to have parts of other people in their person.
Or a pig, for that matter. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take the pig, Doc.
It's like, I'm sorry. So my family's Jewish, so can I do the cadaver?
I'll take the tempeh hamstring, please.
Right.
I actually have. I found the answers to what's the opposite of hypochondria.
Ooh.
If you guys are okay. If you're ready to hear.
Yes.
Okay. After this break. We're back. there are a couple of possibilities. One was somebody just mentioning that that I don't agree with, but they were sort of suggesting that the opposite of hypochondria could be euphoria, because it's like a heightened state of like a positive feeling or whatever when. But the better answers seem to be, and these are going to be extremely difficult to pronounce, anosognosia.
Anosognosia show?
Yes. That sounds good. Yeah.
Is viewed as a deficit of self-awareness, a condition in which a person who suffers a certain disability seems unaware of the existence of his or her disability, which actually sounds like a great thing.
100%
yeah.
me.
Yeah, that's you. Okay. 100%.
And like, I would hope that as my friend, you would tell me if there was stuff that I had that I don't know about.
I already told you you're dyslexic.
I'm just glad I could find out from a friend.
Also, you have a meat cleaver sticking out of your forehead currently.
See, this is something that I would have thought that my friend Madeline would have told me about.
So then the second term is anosodiaphoria, anosodiaphoria. Similarly, that word is a condition in which a person who suffers disability due to brain injury seems indifferent to the existence of their handicap. So I think it's the first. I'm going to go with the first one, anosognosia.
I think so, too. But how would I know?
You're an expert.
Right. Yeah.
This is a strict medical
podcast.
You're an honorary doctor just for being on the show.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I love that. You've saved me so much money in student loans.
That's what this podcast is about. Yeah, saving the folks money.
We're here to save you money, folks.
On that note, what would you like to plug? You can tell people your social media. You can tell them. You could also tell them all about Cold War if you'd like them to know about the cool movie that Madeline stars in with Michael Mookie Blakelock, our good friend.
So Madeline and Mookie star in a movie called Cold War, which is a romantic comedy about a couple that moves in together for the first time and then is struck down by the worst flu of their lives, the raccoon flu, and has to sort of navigate all of the gross new couple stuff along with all of the puking and shitting and all of the gross sickness stuff.
That's great.
And then Madeline, she gets real violent. Spoiler alert.
There's a big fight. A big brawl.
There's a brawl.
There's a straight up brawl.
Oh, yeah.
Mookie is fantastic in it. Madeline is obviously fantastic in it. Antoine McKay, who a lot of people probably know from a whole bunch of stuff, including Empire, is also in it. And Gail Rastifer, who's just a phenomenal Chicago actor. And then there's a whole supporting cast of just phenomenal people. And it is premiering 4 days ago at the LA Comedy Festival. Please have come checked it out.
Yeah. Thank you for having come checked it out.
Yeah. Thank you for having come checked it out.
And then, at Cold War the Movie on Twitter and search for it on Facebook. And I'm at Sterling79 because there were 78 other Sterlings, I think. And that's with an I, Sterling, STIRLING79. On Twitter. It's just a lot of Trump stuff, though. So you can probably skip that one. Just focus on the movie.
In the movie, that's where people will be able to find out about where it'll be available on VOD.
We're on literally pretty much every Instagram and Facebook and just Cold War the Movie spelled out.
Look it up, folks.
Well, thank you so much.
Madeline's phenomenal in it.
Obviously. He is just plain phenomenal.
Sterling.
You're fine.
I'm fine. Again, I am the 43rd Saddam Hussein.
You're the Saddam Hussein and a whole director.
I would love to say they couldn't have done the movie without me, but they couldn't.
They could.
They could have. Absolutely. I did very little.
That's a lie.
That's a lie.
I just held wardrobe out of frame.
That is not true, even a little, at all.
No.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Of course.
This was so much fun.
Thank you.
Guys, guys, we have another listener call in, and it's a really, really great story. It's a story about appendicitis. So all you appendicitis heads out there, listen up. It's a great, great story from Kelsey. Take it away.
Hi, my name is Kelsey, and I want to share the story of the time I had appendicitis. I was 15 and it came very, very suddenly. I was perfectly fine that day. I went with my mom and my grandma to see my grandfather in the nursing home, and we went out to lunch. But as the day went on, I started feeling really sick, and I was nauseous and my stomach hurt. I kept telling my grandma, I don't feel well, and she'd say, oh, it's just gas. And that's kind of her all-purpose diagnosis. Like, your arm could be hanging from its socket, and she'd say, oh, burp a few times and you'll be fine. So I just tried to ignore the pain, but it was worse the next day. I had a fever, and I couldn't keep anything down, and my abdomen felt, like, weirdly hard and hot, and it hurt so bad. And I've always been kind of dramatic about sickness, but this time just felt different. My gut feeling was something was really wrong and I could die. So I went to the doctor and she checked me out. She bent my right leg up towards my chest and the pain in my abdomen was excruciating. So she called an ambulance and it turns out that I not only had appendicitis, but my appendix was actually leaking and maybe a half hour away from bursting. I had emergency surgery that same evening and it was my first surgery, first time spending the night in the hospital. I learned later that my appendix had been wrapped around my intestine, and the doctor had to reach in and unwrap it during the surgery. I was hoping they had it preserved in a jar or something and I could see it, but I never did. The next day, the doctor kept coming in and asking me if I'd passed gas yet, and he was quite cute, so being 15, I was embarrassed and kept lying and saying no, which I'm sure delayed me from leaving the hospital. But I finally got discharged that evening, and I got to miss 2 weeks of school, and here I am 12 years later. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in, Kelsey. That was a great story. Completely insane. Glad that you did not listen to your grandmother when she thought you just had gas. If you have a story of your own definitely dying experience, give us a call at the Definitely Dying Hotline. That's 323-388-3879. Once again, 323-388-3879. Thanks for listening.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.